He later produced his canceled check to prove it. But he felt he was being shadowed at every step, spied upon, and certain that Eisner didn't trust him. Indeed, Eisner continued to cite the House of Blues affair as an example of Ovitz's unethical behavior, including to members of Disney's board. Life at Disney was becoming a nightmare for him, yet Ovitz felt his reputation was at stake. He had to make it work. Later that month, on July 31st, Eisner's mother died at age 79. The funeral was held the next day at Temple Emanuel on Fifth Avenue in Manhattan. Ovitz and his wife attended, and when they emerged from the service, Ovitz noticed that a car idling at the curb was blocking the hearse from pulling up to the entrance. Ovitz went over to the car and asked the driver to move. He refused, and they exchanged some sharp words before a security guard intervened. The car finally pulled away. The hearse pulled up to the temple without further incident, and the pallbearers emerged with the casket. Ovitz later said that he was only doing what he thought any friend would have done under the circumstances. Even though Eisner didn't see any of this, he later said he was told by Iger that Ovitz pulled the driver out of the car and knocked him to the ground. Ovitz flatly denied this. Eisner testified that this was a pivotal moment in his thinking about Ovitz. Somebody was driving a car and he thought they were in the way of the hearse, and he made a giant scene and everybody reported it to me. It's just, I was not in the mood to deal with it or to be understanding about it. Not only did I not want him to be my replacement, I didn't want him to stay as president. Apart from the notion, extraordinary in itself, that at his mother's funeral Eisner was pondering the need to fire Ovitz, this seemed far-fetched, since Eisner had decided to fire Ovitz long before, as he had made clear to Sid Bass when he worried that Ovitz might be suicidal. Ovitz hoped that the combination of Eisner's mother's death and the onset of August, typically a slow month in Hollywood, might bring a respite. He used the occasion of a Disney executive retreat in Aspen on September 6th to denounce leaks to the press. But the very next day, the New York Post reported his comments. Ovitz threw up his hands. It was obvious that he was surrounded by people trying to undermine him. To Tony Schwartz, Eisner excoriated Ovitz's Aspen performance, complaining he hadn't shown up for an afternoon session, that he was not in sync with Eisner on any ethical grounds, and that he was a cancer in the organization, and reported that Bob Pfeiffer, the head of Hollywood Records, whom Ovitz wanted to replace, had called Ovitz the most devious, mean, motherfucking creep. It was now obvious to everyone near the top of the company that Ovitz's days were numbered. To the extent that he had any friends or supporters, no one was going to risk his or her own capital with Eisner to defend him. As Eisner reported to Schwartz, Iger was not as direct about his unhappiness as Sandy Litvak had been. Still, by the summer, he had let me know that he increasingly found Ovitz's involvement at ABC more undermining than constructive. By the time we got to Aspen, a half dozen other senior executives had communicated similar sentiments to me, either directly or through their body language. Nonetheless, Eisner told the Los Angeles Times that same month that rumors of a rift between him and Ovitz were ludicrous. I've been in a lot of management in a lot of companies.